Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of the Return of the Roar podcast. Glad to be back. Unlike the dunk contest on Saturday, we're going to get this done on our first attempt. Frankie Cardicelli, Chris Watkins, as always. Let's start off with that All-Star Saturday.
That might have been your best opening of all time.
You know, I try. Hey, you know, every day is a school day, so I'm learning how to get
to
these
be clear.
Done.
To be clear, that was the first, very first attempt.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
That was the first attempt.
I'm getting a 50 here. It's not going to be like a 46, 45 for, you know, multiple attempts. Let's start off with that. Wow. So here goes the first attempt thing. And Brendan Nunes, also my boy Russell Preston. Shout out Russell, who helped us both actually make our graphics for our shows.
Talented man.
Very talented. All watched All-Star Saturday together. And it was probably the least eventful thing that we could have possibly done together. It was a rough watch. And we watched the whole thing. I mean, we watched from the lame attempt at whatever it was that they called the skills competition this year, to the three-point shootout, which was strange, and then the dunk contest, which was just not it. Frank, what really is there anything that you would say was a salvageable moment from All-Star Saturday? Was there anything that you think you'll remember besides the good times had, of course?
The roundtable pizza that we had.
Yeah. You know what I would rather talk about is pizza tears. I would honestly much rather have a conversation about Roundtable versus Mountain Mike's than Obi Toppin versus Hamidou Diallo or whoever was in the dunk contest.
You don't even remember. You don't even remember who.
I don't. I honestly like. Give me. I'm not joking. I need to think right now of who won. It wasn't Obi Toppin, right? Obi didn't win.
It was Obi Toppin.
Man, that's like literally my only guess.
It was Juan Toscano-Anderson that. Was running around.
Right. How could I? I'm sorry, Russell. Russell's a big Warrior fan. He was rooting hard for JTA. And yeah, I mean, we were all let down. We were all let down.
I mean, I wanted him to win because Russell wanted him to win. And it just honestly, man, there wasn't one notable dunk from the whole night. There wasn't really a moment. I mean, we were outside just hanging out while the 3-point contest was going on, and we came in and saw that Cat won. So what the hell kind of a circus is this All-Star weekend?
Also, Cat was the betting least favorite. I don't know how to say, obviously there's betting favorite. He was the biggest underdog. When I checked odds before the events, I believe he was like plus 1,000 or something.
But did
like
they
that.
Do it the same way? We didn't watch the actual 3-point competition. Did they do it the same way? Because they changed everything else up. They changed the skills contest was a joke. That was an honest to God joke. Yeah. It was like watching a high school. Like a high school PE class run through.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It was definitely more of a PE class than like an actual like.
Throw it to the hole and then throw it to that hole and then shoot for half court. Yeah.
It didn't make any sense because they did like two challenges before they eventually just did what we know as the skills contest. And there was like a point system, but then also the point system didn't matter if you just won the skills contest at the end. So I don't even know if we should really spend a lot of more time on this because I don't know how many people even watched it. But it was not fun. It was not, you know, maybe.
Why'd they make the holes for the passing on skills competition so
massive,
huge?
They used to just be tires.
They were like tires. Hole. Yeah, it was like a little, probably a little smaller than a tire hole. Honestly, it was a complicated pass, and that's the whole point: is you have to be skilled to make the pass. Anyone can throw a basketball through a 7x8 hole.
Do you want to hear the stupidest part? I'm only like 80% sure that this is correct because the rules were obviously incredibly difficult to follow with the randomness of it. The tiebreaker, which was actually necessary to figure out who would go into the final of that competition, was who made the most outlet passes, chest passes, and like baseball passes or something like it was something so, or football, like it was so dumb the criteria that they were making for, like, it would just seem like it was all thrown together in like 2 minutes, and they were just like, oh, like, you know, it's got, we've got the Antetokounmpo brothers, like, that'll work.
Which also, that was, that, I don't know, it was a tough watch. Tough watch. People are being hard on it, and they should be.
They should be.
The All-Star game was really boring too at the beginning, but the end was fun. I mean, Steph going crazy, LeBron with the game winner in Cleveland, very poetic. That's fine, but the NBA needs to do something at All-Star weekend, because it's just not what it used to be. I used to be so excited for it, and arguably the most exciting, I mean, the Rising Stars game had possibly more excitement than any of this other stuff. So
do you feel like the thing that the All-Star event, well, not even the events, because really the three-point contest is fairly star-studded. I shouldn't even say star-studded, but at least relevant people are in it. Do you think a big part of the dunk contest lack of allure is the fact that there's no big names doing it? I've heard that thrown around a lot, and I've kind of convinced myself of it. Like, if Ja Morant were in the dunk contest this year, would that have, you know, maybe made it feel bigger?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know why.
You probably have to win it, though. Also, like, there's not much to just kind of showing up, being like, "Ooh, I'm in it," but I really don't want to hurt myself. So
that's what I'm saying. That's the thing. Stuff. I don't think people want to get hurt, and it is a risk. I think that Darius Garland got hurt in All Star Weekend. I don't know if it came from it exactly, but I think he has some sort of back soreness, or I don't know. I'm not sure if it comes from All Star Weekend, but the point is, these guys they're not really resting like everybody else, and that might be a main reason why some guys don't want to do it.
Let me put this ball in your court, because this is definitely more your alley. So the home run derby really hasn't had this. I guess it has a little bit, but mainly you'll get, you know, Shohei Ohtani doing the home run derby. Aaron Judge will do the home run derby. The people that you want to see in the home run derby, for the most part, will do it. Even with you could probably tell me better than you could probably tell me if this is true, because I'm always hearing, oh, there's a post All-Star or a post home run derby slump that people usually go through, because when you're taking 150 swings straight for the fences and then you go back to playing regular baseball, your swing is just it just takes a while to get adjusted. Do you think maybe it's a little bit of that, or is that kind of even a misnomer?
I don't know. I mean, with baseball, it's just like so technical, and that's why your swing's so technical, and people don't want to do it because of that very reason. You've heard that a lot of people slump after they do the home run derby because they're swinging out of their shoes, and they're training for that 3 day span leading into it, 2 day span leading into it. Then they come back, and they usually, historically, I think more players than not have struggled. The dunk contest, though, I don't know if that really messes up your flow of gameplay. Yeah, just dunking.
I wouldn't think so.
A basketball. I mean, there's not much. I mean, it's technical in a different way. It's just not as structured as like having your baseball swing, and you're messing up the way you load when you're waiting for a pitch and stuff like that. With dunking, it's just kind of more of, I think, in my opinion, what do they? Because with baseball, I believe they get a bonus from the dunk contest too, though, don't you? Don't you get $1 million?
You have to get some form of check, for sure.
You get paid from the home run derby, and then obviously they have the charity aspect of it with like the golden baseballs and stuff like that. So it's hey, KSGK's having John Clayton on today. That's crazy. Sorry, I got a text from my boss. John Clayton, is John Clayton still with ESPN?
No clue. Does John Clayton still rock a
Mom, I'm done with my segment. That's one of the best.
This is ESPN's.
That's one of the best ones of all time, man.
While we're talking baseball, segment. Too, how perfect.
Yeah. This is – was he a football guy?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, he is a football guy. I'm sorry. I was thinking
Carl Ravitch.
That was not who I was thinking. But
Peter Gammons?
No, I get him and the main baseball dude who's freaking hilarious and always laughs at Scott Van Pelt doing a Baltimore accent.
Is he old?
Yes, he's an older guy. Oh, my God. Tim Kirkjian.
Oh, Tim Kirkjian.
Love me some Tim Kirkjian.
I love Tim Kirkjian. I love Tim Kirchin. Yeah, that was back in the day. Sorry, we're going to get off baseball soon. By the way, baseball's still in a lockout in case anyone's been they probably are not going to be playing baseball until summer. Back in the day, though, I was thinking about how great – did you ever watch the Sunday Night Baseball broadcast with John Miller and Joe Morgan? Sorry, the late
yeah, every
Joe
so Morgan. Often I would, yeah.
Those were great. I was thinking about like how great those broadcasts were, and I saw that now they got A-Rod off. They won't watch his baseball, how bad A-Rod was at broadcasting. You got to have good broadcasters, man. Like who has the best broadcasters? Like, which network has the best broadcasters, you think?
Well, this is actually a pretty relevant conversation in sports because there's a whole bunch of money being thrown around for Troy Aikman and Al Michaels and Will Joe Buckley, Fox. All of this is very much in the sports media, I don't know what you would call it, world right now. It's all going on. I would say my favorite, I mean... You know, I probably don't have one at the moment, actually. I mean, I really enjoy individuals, but
you
in terms,
always you
I
sit
like
on
individuals.
The fence.
I don't this isn't sitting I just don't have like a grouping of people that I love Gus Johnson. I would say Buck and Aikman just because they make it feel right, but I'm not a big Joe Buck guy, and honestly, PNG? Like Aikman's fine. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really thinking that, but yeah, for sure. But even like Mark Jones and Doris, I love Doris. I love Mark as individuals. Sometimes, I mean, I love Mark sometimes because he's a little over the top. I would probably say that's the best one. I love me some Kevin Harlan. I don't know. Yeah, I'm more individual. I'm not a big fan of a lot of color commentators either. I think I've found that is
Mark
I'm
Jackson,
big play by play guy, but. With all due respect, no.
With all due respect.
Like, that's a bad – like, I love Breen, but then, yeah, Mark Jackson and Van Gundy, I'm just not the biggest fans of.
Well, the side conversations that Van Gundy and Jackson have, they always kind of get, like, in their own – people talk about how Chuck and Shaq argue. I feel like Van Gundy and Jackson kind of go back and forth that a lot, too. So.
And then there's, like, you know, Albert used to be with Chris Webber, and Webber's terrible.
Yes!
Gus Johnson's great. Like Gus Johnson to me is probably the GOAT of specifically football announcing, but or play by play, I should say. And basketball, he's also pretty damn good for a really good game. But I don't know. Yeah, I just don't have an answer to that. I'm sorry. Who's yours?
Mine's. I mean, it's like retroactive. Probably TNT back when it was Harlan and Marv Albert, just because it was. No matter who is calling a game, you're getting – I mean, that's not a knock on Ian Eagle or anything.
Oh, I love Ian, too.
I believe he fills in now on TNT now, doesn't he? Or that's ESPN,
no,
I think.
He does TNT.
No, who fills in on TNT now? Also, he's on 2K, and he does baseball.
Can't tell you who that is.
I don't know, but yeah.
I don't know.
What?
It's an interesting conversation, though. I think...
who are yours, everybody?
Yeah.
Let us know. Let us know who your favorite broadcasters are. Broadcasting team, really. Because I know it's been kind of a hot topic of discussion lately. So, let's hear it. Okay. Kings, finally. Back to Kings. We're still in All-Star break.
Let's get to Kings. We're 15 minutes in. We'll figure to talk about the Kings eventually.
We still are in All-Star break mode. It was nice having a break, but it was. Last night, back at it.
Back at it, and there was a lot of expectation coming in, not too specifically tonight, but for this final stretch of games here. Obviously, the Kings find themselves three. Are they still 3.5 because Portland lost last night?
They're still 3.5 out because...
3.5 out of the play-in game with... reaching on almost 20 games left here where the Kings are going to have to winning ball games is the only way that they're going to make this deficit shrink. And they have a pretty tough schedule ahead of them. I believe it's been thrown around that they have like the ninth toughest schedule remaining in the NBA for the remainder of the season. That's obviously not going to do the Kings any favors. They have a couple games against Minnesota and San Antonio as well. I think they might have another one against Portland. I'm not entirely sure. I actually don't think so now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
No more against Portland. They own that tiebreaker.
Yes, I know they own all of their tiebreakers. Jason Ross broke that down yesterday on his show.
For now.
Yes, for now. And the Kings, like I said, the only way they're going to get through to the play-in tournament is by winning a lot of tough games down this stretch. They did not get off to a good start last night. I mean, the first three quarters, it was very reminiscent to what we saw kind of in Chicago, where they hung around for three quarters and then just kind of couldn't. I mean, even in Chicago, at least they held on a little bit better than last night. But they just, at the end of the day, didn't have it. And I mean, specifically last night, the Nuggets just could not miss from the field. It felt like, sure, like the Kings weren't playing lockdown defense, but I mean, at every single buzzer beater and every, you know, oh, that's a pretty tough shot, it would just go in every single time. I believe the Nuggets ended up shooting way more than 50% from the field, over 40%, damn near 90%.
55 from the field, 42 from three, 85 from the free throw line. Yeah, you're not going to win many games when you're allowing numbers like that. And the Kings allow those numbers a lot.
They allowed those, many, many times. And again, like you said, they're just not going to win a lot of basketball games like that. It was really just, you know, if you can let Nikola Jokic do what he's going to do, he's the MVP for a reason. That fool is just going to get his numbers. But when you allow the Will Bartons of the world to score 30 plus and you know, you're just not going to win a lot of games when Will Barton drops 30 on you. How do you feel going in? I mean, obviously last night's game is going to kind of temper your emotions a little bit, but how do you feel the Kings are situated heading into this final stretch of games?
I think they're situated well still. I know it was one game and they, again, I think it kind of comes down to how bad the defense was, and I'm not gonna let one game fully sway the way I feel. I think that if they kind of get rolled on Saturday tomorrow, that's going to change the way I feel. If they can't come out and you know, if they lose tomorrow, the season's not necessarily over either, but it's just the way they're playing. And the way that they laid down flat in the fourth was pretty concerning. And I just really hope it's not going to be a trend. But I would like to chalk it up to Alvin Gentry made a bad decision last night. Yeah. I think he made a very bad decision last night by having all of Harrison Barnes, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis all on the bench to start the fourth quarter. And yeah, Nikola Jokic was on the bench too, granted, but when you're down by five to start the fourth and you let Denver go on an 8-2 run to start the quarter, the game's over. It's 11-point lead with 8 minutes left. The game's all but over. And I think if you had taken advantage of that time and said, you know, we can't really afford to take our best players out right now. Yeah, Jokic is out for them, but let's have Fox, Barnes, and Sabonis in together. Let's go on a run on our own, because that way let's have a 4-point lead. Instead, let's go on a run of our own and take advantage of their all-star being out, not us putting all three of our best players out, because the lineup at that point, I believe, was Davion Mitchell, Jeremy Lamb, Justin Holiday,
Damian Jones out there.
And I can't remember who the other person was that was out there off the top of my head, but it just was not enough. It might have been Mo Harkless.
DiVincenzo?
I think it was Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah, I think they ran DiVincenzo with Holiday, with Lamb, and Davion and Jones.
It was an interesting decision.
And if I'm not mistaken, he did the same exact thing in Brooklyn as well, which is kind of what led to them losing. I think they were down 8 or 12 or something like that in Brooklyn, making a run, and then he took out Sabonis for Holmes, and the game then went to like 19, and at that point the game was over. We've kind of seen a trend here the past couple games of Alvin Gentry honestly just making rotational mistakes, and it's cost them. It has definitely cost them at least a couple games here. I don't think anyone's expecting or has expected Alvin Gentry to come back next season. Is this kind of, you know, you think the nail in the coffin for Alvin moving forward, or do you think? I mean, I guess it might be a little premature because if they go on a run here, but how are you feeling about Alvin's security these days?
I mean, I think that it's, we've talked about there might be some things in his contract. I think it just, it won't mean he's going to be head coach. It might just mean he gets a little bit more of a payday, but I don't think he's going to be the head coach. I think it's a 99.9% certainty he will not be the head coach next year. And that's not a knock on Alvin at all. Alvin's been great. We love the media sessions. He's always been so fun. He's been in this league for 30 years. He knows what he's doing. He is a guy that can coach a team. I just don't know if it's this team. And I don't know if last night was, you know, I don't know if there is really necessarily a nail in the coffin. I think that it's just kind of like a we're running the clock out situation. And everyone kind of, I think everyone knows that, even Alvin. And they're going to undergo a full coaching search for the first time in 8-9 years. They haven't really ever had a coaching search before. They had a couple people they interviewed back before Jaeger, like 2 or 3 candidates, and then Jaeger became available, and Vladdy immediately has hired him on the spot. Obviously, we know what happened with George Karl back in the day. We know that Luke Walton also was hired on the spot just without having any other search. So it's going to be nice to see the Kings have a full coaching search. But yeah, it makes you kind of wonder what would happen if they did have that guy, if they did have Kenny Atkinson right now on the bench, if they did have a name that I thought I've heard mentioned a while back was Mike Brown.
I just vomited in my mouth.
Why do the Kings keep trying to replicate the Warriors is the one thing I don't understand. You can't replicate that.
I don't think of Warriors when I think of Mike Brown.
Are they gonna replicate the Chicago Bulls next, or the 80s Boston Celtics?
Bring in Tibbs.
Someone had a tweet about how Tom Thibodeau has success for one season, then he just refuses to change no matter how bad things get for like 13 months. Then he gets fired. He like refuses. Well,
I'm gonna cross sports here again. Like I just went through this with Mike Zimmer as my football coach. I'm sure as the football coach of my favorite team, the Minnesota Vikings, I should say. And the players have legitimately said, like, he leads, talking about Mike Zimmer, leads in a fear-based way. Like, he wants you to do things because you're afraid of the repercussions of, oh my God, he's going to yell at me after. I definitely get those same exact vibes with Tibbs, where it's just, and that wears on people. Everybody in the Vikings organization is like, we just need something new, something fresh, someone who's not going to come in and yell at us for the past 8 years about doing the smallest little defensive adjustment and stuff. And I definitely think Tibbs is the same way, where it's like he can instill a culture in you for a year because it is a very big how big of a culture shock would it be to go from Luke Walton to Tom Thibodeau? Like that is literally night and day.
And so a player's coach to a coach's coach.
Yes. I'm sure if the Kings were to bring in Tibbs next year, there would be a huge change. You know, they're just in mentality, especially in style of play. I'm sure their defense would take an uptick. We'd see a lot of players that we wouldn't typically see play. But also, I guarantee that by the second or third year, like you're saying, it would just be, all right, like, very much like what we heard under Dave Jaeger, is these guys just kind of didn't want to be pushed in that way. And then we saw a very large overcorrection when they went to Luke Walton, where it's like, all right, well, here's this demanding guy. Now we're going to give you freaking Bill Walton's son.
Not that
I've heard a lot of Luke actually isn't as vibey as Bill, but you know, nonetheless, we talked with Luke a few times and he was very nice.
I mean, I've only heard nice things about Luke Walton. We didn't talk to him more than like that. I mean, just being around him and seeing, I've only heard good things from other people about him. Yeah. Obviously, his track record as a basketball coach was poor and his decision making was not great. But also the roster was not to bail him out. But that's what I was saying. That's one of the biggest thing we talked about earlier of the season is the roster just isn't good, and Luke isn't the all at fault. It's like, well, no, I'm not saying he's not all at fault, but both things can be true. That Luke was not a great coach and the roster was not good. It was a doomed marriage. But now the roster, I think, has some good pieces. Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I was seeing last night, though, and I've been seeing since they made the trade, is especially with Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield off the roster, Kings don't have many shooters anymore, or any, really. I mean, the best shooter on the team right now is Harrison Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's concerning. Not because HB is a bad shooter, but because that's not really what he does. HB doesn't just go out there and camp out and float and spot up threes. He floats, but he's also a guy that can put his head down and go into the paint and go to the rim, like we've seen. And that kind of leaves Jeremy Lamb, Dante DiVincenzo, who struggled. De'Aaron Fox has been shooting better from three, but I wouldn't really categorize him as a shooter. I mean, obviously,
definitely not.
Davion Mitchell's had his moments, had a tough night last night. Trey Lyles played 5 minutes. I mean, there's just nothing. Justin Holiday has really struggled except for that game against Chicago. The Kings need shooters. They need floor spacers. If you were to have this team with, I mean, off the top of my head, the good version of Buddy Hield or like J.J. Redick back a couple years ago, that's what they need. They need a guy that can just go out there. Kyle Korver a couple years ago, they've seen a guy that can spot up and knock down threes and be a threat. Because Sabonis is so good at finding his teammates. He had 5 assists last night. He should have had more. He should have had a triple-double, in my opinion. All the threes the Kings missed last night. Domantas Sabonis was responsible for finding a lot of those guys. And the Kings last night as a team, they shoot 9 of 29, which is 31% from three-point range. And that's been kind of a trend. That's been kind of a trend because I'm looking at the game log here. They have shot, I believe, under 40% from three. And if it'll load, they've shot under, so 31%. They had a good night against Chicago, 25%, 36%, 35%, 33%. They need more shooters because that was one of the biggest skill sets they had before the trade was Buddy Hield, bad basketball player, good shooter. Tyrese Haliburton, very good basketball player, good shooter. Now you take those two out for a center who's arguably a top five center in the game. I got dragged on Twitter for that. I believe Domantas Sabonis is a top five player in the game. Stop hating on Domantas Sabonis, people. It changes things.
Yeah. And, you know, I hate to, I feel like this is my thing, but like I mentioned this when people were clamoring for trading Buddy Hield of like, it's totally fine that I am also right on board with you. He needs to go. But if you were going to let him go, you were going to have to bring back some semblance of shooting back. And I guess maybe they were hoping that Jeremy Lamb could potentially provide that. And Justin Holiday obviously is a good, not great shooter in general. But yeah, I mean, they don't have anybody who's a real threat from out there. And they have people who can hit threes but aren't shooters, like you're saying. I mean, the team is definitely lacking that as well as rim protection in a very real way. And those are two very, very important parts of basketball is hitting your shots and defending the rim. Those are like great ways of winning basketball games. If you can protect the rim and hit your threes, you're going to win a lot of basketball games. And the Kings just flat out can't do that. Especially when, you know, you have, you know, Nikola Jokic and stuff also going off and creating a bunch of, you know, you're having to focus on him that really leaves shooters open and leaves cutting lanes open. It's tough. It was a tough game. And, you know, they play the Nuggets again on what is
Saturday?
It, Saturday. Tomorrow. I kind of expect a lot of the same. And it's definitely going to be something to monitor moving forward of just like, is this team going to, because they kind of haven't, I haven't really looked, but I don't think they've really dialed down the 3-point attempts either. Maybe a little bit just because, you know, Buddy was having nights where he would take 10 threes, but, you know, it doesn't really feel like anybody else is, you know,
well,
I feel like they're like, oh, let's try and just be efficient from three.
No, they have guys that are still taking threes. You know, when Chemezi was in the rotation, which he could be back in the next game for all we know, he was taking threes. Mo Harkless took three last night, made one. Hall, I mean, there's guys that are taking threes. Jeremy Lamb, DiVincenzo has been off. I mean, he made two out of six last night. I think he's a guy that could tap into it eventually. I believe he shot 38% from three last year. Yeah, 38% from three last year. He's a 34% shooter from three over his career. I think he's a guy that could figure it out. The team just needs guys that can knock it down consistently. And
I think Jason Ross pointed this last night on the post game press conference that I was listening to, or post game show, that the Nuggets had six more threes than the Kings last night. Six times three is 18. The Kings lost by 18 points.
It's a skill. It's an art form. It's not for him. On a positive note, before we get into the end stuff. Domantas Sabonis last night. Chris.
Boy, oh boy.
He had, sorry, back to the box score. 33 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists. He was 15 of 23 from the field, 65% shooting. Since the beginning of the 2018-19 season, which I believe was 18-19, it's one, two, I think it's five seasons ago almost, four seasons ago. Only five players have posted a stat line like that. Can you name them?
33, 14, and 5.
While shooting 65% or higher.
Giannis.
One.
14 rebounds. Jokic.
Nope.
Wow. Embiid.
Two.
LeBron.
Negative.
Since when?
2018-19 season.
18-19. Wow.
Only five players done it.
14 rebounds is quite a bit of rebounding. That is tough stuff. I feel like I'm missing somebody obvious. Julius Randle? That's not obvious, but man, I don't. Kawhi Leonard, maybe? He gets a lot of rebounds.
Do you give up? I'll give you one more guess.
Nah, I'm gonna give up. I think that's
so. Giannis did it 12 times.
Of course, Joel. Yeah, that seems like easy.
Yeah, Joel and Embiid did it 4 times.
Okay,
Karl Anthony Towns has done it twice.
Oh, Cat. I should have said Cat.
He's done it twice, and then the only other player that's done it once, Anthony Davis,
Anthony Bennett.
And then Domantas Sabonis. So that's your list: Giannis, Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, Sabonis. Over the last 4 or 5 seasons. Have posted that kind of stat line. That's an MVP, two-time MVP, MVP frontrunner this year, one of the best centers in the league in Towns, an MVP candidate in Davis in the past. I mean, yeah, Sabonis, put some respect on his name. And he does it effortlessly, too. He looks like he was completely – I don't know if any other player can – maybe other than Embiid can make Nikola Jokic look like that, struggling in the paint. But – Sabonis got whatever he wanted last night. It's just the other guys did not show up. Harrison Barnes, De'Aaron Fox, most notably did not show up.
Very reminiscent of like a DeMarcus Cousins game. I feel like we've gone back in the past now. We're like, oh yeah, this guy is going absolutely bananas. And if literally anybody else could give us something, it would be great. Because I think De'Aaron really, really struggled last night to find a shot. He was struggling to get to the rim. I think he only had like 10 or 12 points until late in that fourth quarter.
A lot of garbage time.
Yeah.
He had 14 points in the last like 3 minutes and he got 3 quick scores or like last 6 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
It was, they were down by like 15 at that point.
What did he end up with?
20.
Yeah, that's crazy.
On 50% shooting, which that's fine, but we need you to be more like the aggressiveness needs to come earlier. You know, and Matt George put that out and he got some. I mean, Rob Perez kind of quoted it and had some fun with it about
what?
The NFT thing. He said he got De'Aaron rug pulled them, didn't he? I don't want to get into that whole thing. Look up De'Aaron Fox NFT if you want to.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Matt George.
Matt George tweeted De'Aaron Fox can't disappear down the stretch. And Matt's right. But then Rob Perez, you know, because he likes to hate on the Kings, put De'Aaron really pulled the rug from under them, didn't he? Because apparently rug pulling's term.
The NFT term. Gotcha.
NFTs, backing out. And anyways, that's been a whole thing. Anytime I tweet anything about De'Aaron Fox right now, I'm getting hammered with
NFTs. Can you believe this? Oh my gosh. Disgrace. Let me tag every single media person who's ever existed and said anything.
They're angry.
De'Aaron Fox stole my money.
It's like, you know, I can't help you with that. I can't. I cannot help you with that. I don't dabble in NFTs, so
can't answer that.
But no,
is there anything else from last night's game?
It's one game, and again, this is kind of an all over the place podcast. We're kind of
shout out Mike Malone. While we're all
shout
over
out
the
Mike,
place.
Shout out Mike.
Love Malone. My guy Mike. Like
you see all the players though pointing out the Will Barton, Jokic. They all said on video.
Yep.
Happy it happened against Sacramento. Like,
yep.
Thank God they fired him because he's our coach. It's like, okay, it's great. I'm very happy for you. I'm very, very happy for you.
I'm going to get personal here. If you're listening to the podcast, you're going to learn something about. I haven't. I haven't dated a lot of women in my life, but Michael Malone has given me the feeling of the one that got away. I know what that feels like because Michael Malone is that guy for me.
We're talking about like Rushmore of, we're going to do Rushmore of the Kings in a little bit. Who's the Rushmore of the ones that got away? It's like Mike Malone, Luca. I mean, how many?
That already hurts. Like, I mean, you can stop. You can stop.
That's it. Right, that's there. The mountain. I mean, that's it. It's like a statue. I mean, it's not Rushmore. It's Statue of Liberty. It's Mike Malone holding up, holding up Luca. That's the statue the Kings have. That has really doomed. That would have, the Kings would be a if they had Mike Malone as head coach and Luka Doncic on the team. Holy hell!
Yeah, I mean, the sad thing is, I was trying to think of like who else is in there, and like there's just a massive gap between like this. Really, there's a 16-year gap, pretty much, of like, or I guess Mike kind of fits in like 10 years or something like that. But like, there's nobody in the, you know, Dante Green. That's the guy that really got it. Like, there's Tyrese, no, they Halliburton weren't even really trying. Like, when I really think about it, it's probably Hedo and Gerald Wallace would be the other guy.
If Tyrese turns into like the next Chris Paul, that could be,
that would be not ideal.
If he's a 2010 guy, which I think he could be,
trending that way.
We don't need to get, I mean, I don't want to, I was talking about with some of the media members at dinner last night, just about how I think we all need to kind of move on from that. It's over. Tyrese Halliburton was traded. Sabonis is here. It's a trade that could really benefit both sides. I think we can all just kind of move on from that. But yeah, if Tyrese does become great and Sabonis does not become great here, he's up there. The Rushmore begins to take shape of Mike Malone, Luka, Tyrese. And then I guess, yeah, just Gerald Wallace, the other one right now. Are we forgetting anybody?
Yeah,
who left here? Gerald King,
Wallace. Mike was just such a glaring. There's everybody that we missed in the draft. I guess I don't know how you could fit that
in. Just a picture of the NBA draft. Just a ping pong ball. Just a ping pong ball.
Because I mean, you know, you can throw Kawhi, you can throw Dame, you can throw CJ, you can throw Clay,
Donovan Mitchell.
You can throw whatever. We were talking a little last night with James Hamm about all the guys that have, you know, Rudy Gobert has came through, and all these people who have came through SAC, put on a SAC practice jersey, and just, for whatever reason, the Kings were not fans of. It just would have taken one of them, and then we got none of them.
Just one.
Hilarious.
Just one.
So yeah, let's get to this Mount Rushmore. Apparently, I actually learned. I will say every day, like I said, every day is a school day. Is something my dad always used to say. My dad is still alive. I don't know why I say used to say. My dad says it. Mount Rushmore, apparently, very controversial topic.
I absolutely have no
idea, but apparently Mount Rushmore is a very, it's pretty much a, hey, natives who were here, it's a big middle finger to them.
Really?
Who knew?
I've never been. American history does seem like it is, yeah.
American history is not very chill.
History's happening right now as well. It's a lot.
Not very chill.
Every day is, yeah, it's... Last night I looked at you and was like, we're literally just sitting here watching basketball, and I felt guilty, it doesn't feel right.
It's like, especially, you know, you and I work in sports, obviously. It's like, we're just completely not ignoring, but you know, there's just this massive thing going on.
It's privilege. Not to get all political. Sorry. I'm just saying, I just feel very privileged to be here, and we're safe. When you look at Alex Len, who's on the bench, probably just going through absolute hell. We've heard from all the teammates from the team about how Alex, who is from the Ukraine, he has family out there, and you don't know what's going to happen today or tomorrow. But for now, they're safe, and that's what's most important. But you don't know what's going to happen today. He looked like he was going through it. And all the players said that it's tough to see someone that broken down, and they had that great moment at center court with everybody. It's Chris and I were talking last night at the game, and it was the third quarter. I'm like, we are literally just sitting here watching a basketball game when it's just crazy. We're all on the same planet, just while so many different things are going on right across the drink, the ocean out there. We're here. It's just, I don't know. Everybody's count your blessings today.
Yep.
That's all.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you. It's something, it's humbling is probably not the right word, but let just, you know, when you're at the game, just think for like 2 seconds, like, oh, there's like an entire country of people that are just not like, this is the the furthest thing from a possibility right now. I mean,
getting displaced, going, like, I saw pictures of people and they're in the subway, and there's like movie posters fucking charted and stuff behind them, and ads for like McDonald's. Like, this is not a myth. Like, it's just, I think people sometimes haven't traveled much, and I haven't traveled much, and it's something that I have tried to do a better job of make. It's just, it's realization that there are places that exist outside of the United States, and they're people like us. They're living the same lives we live. They're living underneath the subway right now while bombs are going off. It's just, it was tough for me for a minute to fully get into the game, especially after what we saw from the beginning part the moment of silence with both teams. It just kind of took me out for a minute. I just really feel privileged, blessed to be where I am right now, here, safe. And I hope everybody else over there is going to come through this okay. It's a scary time. And I feel for Alex and family too. It's it's very scary, but yeah, nicer to remind yourself. Mm-hmm. As we phase out of history.
To Mount Rushmore.
To Mount Rushmore.
Where we started, Mount Rushmore. We're going to etch a couple, our personal Mount Rushmores. We're just going to, I mean, whatever. We're just going to call it our top, our favorite, our fave four.
It's four. It's fab four. Final four. The four.
I don't know. All those are fine.
Do you want to just go off the top of your head?
Are you going draft style? What are we doing?
No, I think we could both have the same if we had to. I think let's flip. I'll flip a coin. I'm gonna flip an imaginary coin, and you pick what you want, and I'll tell you if I in my head is what it is.
Ready?
What do you got?
Yep. 3, 2, 1. Tails never fails.
I did go heads. I truthfully went heads in my head before, so you can go first.
Douche. All right. I mean, my number one draft pick has to be. Oh, whoa. I was going to say it's got to be Chris Webber. I'm just going to say that because he's got to be somewhere on the Mount Rushmore. He might as well be first. I mean, obviously, he was the best player on our best teams. I mean, what really needs to be said? Chris Webber speaks for himself. He's amazing. I don't even know what to say. Like, he's one of our best scorers of all time. Was the heart of the ball movement for those teams. He was everything that Domantas Sabonis is pretty much what Chris Webber was for those teams, except he had great teammates around him, a great culture around him, a great coach for him. And, you know, for that reason, you know, and Chris is just, you know, if you were to ask any random Joe Schmo who the best king, I would say of all time, Sacramento king of all time, they'd probably say Chris Webber, if not Mitch Richmond, but they more than likely say Chris Webber, I would imagine. Face of the franchise.
Do you go for the second? Do you go second now, or do
I? I thought we were going to go one for one.
We'll go one for one. I also have Chris Webber. I think it's easier to just go. Chris Webber has to be on your rush on a Mount King's Mount Rushmore. He's arguably the best player in the Sacramento era, like you said. And yeah, I mean, what more can you say other than the fact he's Hall of Famer.
I don't even know what to say. Like,
it's Chris Webber.
It's Chris Webber. If you're from here, you know. I mean, even if you're not, I think that's the real telltale sign is if you're not here, if you're not from here, you still know. It's Chris Webber. My second pick. I'll do Rick. I'm going to do Rick Alleman, just because, you know, he was the coach of those teams, I think the coach is just as important as the players, especially for a team like that, where, you know, if you ask any of those guys, Doug talked about it all the time of just Rick really was the guy that instilled in them that this style of play is okay, and you using your you using your basketball gifts to express your creativity is the greatest thing you could do on that court. He really obviously stressed that with Jay Will, who really, you know, started this whole Sacramento or that whole Sacramento Kings culture of, wow, like these guys aren't just a bunch of Cowtown guys. These are guys who are really playing fun basketball. And this is something that you should watch and pay attention to. And Rick was at the center of all of it. I mean, it's no coincidence that since Rick left, we just literally nothing was the same. We have not found any success in a post Rick Alamon era. And without Rick, I mean, I really don't think that those teams are able to go. I mean, you know, you could maybe argue that if you had Phil Jackson as your coach or something, maybe that's what, or somebody else, quote unquote, better as your head coach, they maybe could have taken you over the top. But I think Rick took those teams about as far as he could. And, you know, it's the reason why you and I are doing this podcast here today is because Rick led those teams to just such a beautiful style of basketball that made everyone in the town love them. And
yeah, without those and 8 years of success, the team might not be here.
If they 100% no.
If they have nothing to show, because again, Sam, they made the playoffs, I believe, in the first year they moved here. Then they didn't make it again until I believe 96 when they played the Sonics, and then they missed again until they made the playoffs, what, 10 times, I think, 11 times over 36 years. It's 37 years. If without Rick Adelman, you're right. The Kings might be the Sonics. They might be the Virginia Beach Kings.
I would say they are.
So I like that pick. I like that pick a lot. I am going to go with the other Hall of Famer that the Kings have in the Sacramento era, Mitch Richmond. Now, he played for some teams that were obviously not very good, but it's the Rock. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the third all-time scorer on the Kings list. He's the all-time Sacramento era scorer because the other guys ahead of him are Oscar Robertson, Jack Twyman.
Who we will not be including, correct?
We will not be including, no. I mean, obviously, no. That's just who Oscar Robertson about. Yeah. Which, by the way, I was having an argument with a friend of mine. Shout out Blake, who's like a massive Lakers fan.
Blake.
Huge Lakers fan. He is not of the thinking that Oscar Robertson would be successful in the NBA today.
Has he watched clips? Or what? Yeah, how did he come to that consensus?
Well, he's of the consensus that like the opponents back then were like car mechanics and stuff like that. Or like they were people that are not world-class athletes. But I had a good friend of mine who came up with another side of the argument and said, well, but Oscar Robertson, if he came up through this system now with AAU and high school basketball and training and sports science, he probably would be that or better. It's just, I mean, I don't know if
you cross error comparisons for basketball are impossible.
It's toxic. It's toxic. It's so toxic. And he's a huge Kobe Bryant fan, and he was so angry that Kobe's below Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Oscar Robertson. I said, dude, your Lakers bias is showing. You're adamant. You are being biased. I like Kobe Bryant too. I grew up not liking Kobe Bryant because he was a Laker, but then when you look at how great he was as a basketball player, I can appreciate his greatness. And he belongs on a top 10 list, but I don't think he's above top 6 is my point. We don't need to get into who's top 10 or everything. I'm just saying Oscar Robertson averaged a triple double before it was cool when Russell Westbrook made it cool.
I don't even think it was an official stat at that point. I don't think they were like counting triple doubles at that point.
No, the guy was an absolute
something he was doing.
It's a problem. He won championships. Put some respect on Big O.
Yeah.
But no, we can't put him on the list.
We're just doing Sacramento era.
Sacramento era, but no, Mitch Richmond. So yeah, on mine so far, I have the two Hall of Famers, Chris Webber, Mitch Richmond. You have Chris Webber and Rick Adelman.
I'm also going to put Mitch on mine for third. You know, I kind of always, I mean, I just wasn't born in Mitch's time, but I can definitely respect the fact that he was, you know, the only good player on those Kings teams pretty much. And was, you know, he was a, I don't know how many time all-star, but he was an all-star for the team. I believe he won his all-star game MVP while playing for the Kings, which is, I can't even imagine if a King were to win all-star MVP, what it would be.
Six-time all-star. All with the Kings in a row.
I mean, that's unprecedented at this point. Like it was a miracle to get DeMarcus into two. Did he get two or three?
He got three, but the third one he got traded.
Gotcha. Boy. So, you know, I can't imagine what it would be like to have a six-time All-Star on the team. I mean, we haven't seen that since I'm sure C. Webb was an All-Star for that many years. But you just got to go with Mitch. I mean, he's got to be on the list. It's not his fault that he wasn't surrounded by, you know, the type of team that Chris was, but he also led us to getting Chris. So I think that's a very big part of his Sacramento Kings legacy. And for that, he's getting his head etched into a rock. For Ouch. The Rock. Hey, now.
Hey, the Rock's on a rock. I'm looking at the all-time three-point field goal percentage leaders in Kings history. Mm-hmm. And the top five are crazy. Anthony Peeler, 48%. George Hill, 45%. Seth Curry, 45%. Coutinho Mobley. You have Aaron Aflalo on this list. Tyrese Halliburton. I mean, it's just, what is the qualification for that? It should be a minimum 200 attempts or something. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I was looking for my next guy here. He is not on the top 3-point field percentage list, but he has to be on there. Peja, as a King, mm-hmm. he shot just under 40% from three. For his career, he shot 40%. He's top 10 all the time in points scored for the franchise. I think when you look at the success those early 2000s teams had, Chris Webber was a big part, but Peja, without him, I don't know what the team looks like without a guy who can space the floor like that and do what he did. One of the best shooters in the game at that time. I wonder what would have happened if he would have played in this era. But 24 points per game, 6 rebounds, 92% from the free throw line. He played almost every game in 2003, 2004. MVP candidate. I just think he definitely has made his mark as far as there's been a lot of bad teams over the years. I'm saying Peja Stojaković on the good teams was probably the second best part of those teams, in my opinion.
That's an interesting one. I'd like to have a little conversation about that, because when you're saying, I mean, these are four faces that are the faces of your franchise, is pretty much what you're saying. So I think it's interesting that Peja, you know, I just don't think a lot of people would think that way. I think that's, I don't really know how I even feel about it. Like, I don't think you're wrong. Like, I think the argument you just gave is a perfect, like, you know, name another guy besides Chris Webber who was an MVP. He was legitimate, like, a top three MVP finalist.
Impactful. I'm talking like impactful. Mm-hmm. Peja was a guy who went out there and got 20 points a game. He was super impactful. But Mike Bibby, Doug Christie, Vladdy, those guys were impactful. But Peja from the year 2000 to the year 2006, when he got traded to Indiana, he averaged 20 points per game, 5 boards, a steal, 46 field goal percent, 40% from three. And he was only taking 5 attempts per game while shooting 90% from the free throw line. Almost 50-40-90. I mean, the guy, it's crazy. I don't know if he ever did do 50-40-90, did he?
I'm sure. 50 was, is probably where he fell
was
short.
Very close. He was 48% from the field, 43% from three, 92%, which led the league that year. Mm-hmm. He was an MVP. He was top 5 MVP.
I think I've figured out where I fall short on Peja is just he doesn't have the moment, and that kind of sums up Peja's tackle. He just didn't ever come up in the biggest moments. Well,
one big issue. Do you want 2002 conference finals? He was hurt.
For sure.
He barely played. And I'm not saying that
I think the first game.
That correct? Would have been his moment. Yeah. But it's like, if he was a big part of those, that if he was fully healthy for that, again, mm-hmm. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole and say if Peja was healthy, the Kings are champions. But I think if Peja was healthy, the Kings might have been champions.
I so don't disagree. Absolutely, yeah. Don't disagree. Hedo did come in and put in very, very solid, because I think all of that series during the pandemic, it was like when absolutely nothing was on, and all of those games are on YouTube, and I watched like literally every single second of those games, and Hedo did come in and play very, very well. I just think, I think that's my biggest quote unquote beef with Peja is just he just doesn't have that moment, and Mike does have those moments, and I'm considering putting him on there for me, but I just don't think.
Would he be your last pick?
He does. He would be my last pick, but I don't think I'm going to go there.
Where are you going?
I almost want to put a troll on there. Like, I'm like, I'm you hate this, Frank, but I'm going to sit on the fence on this, and like I want to put like Pete D'Alessandro on there as a cautionary tale of like look, when you're the Sacramento Kings, that is as big of a part of your history as the success is.
Well, remember the draft, the draft ping pong ball. You could just put the ping pong balls up there. That would resemble all the people we missed.
Yep.
It's like a memorial.
We'll put I'm going to put the six from that used to be sit outside the,
I like that.
The Arco Arena. I'm going to put the six on there, not for the sixth man, because the sixth man is implied to be the fans. It's the external forces that are not on the court. That's what the six is going to represent.
That's deep, bro.
The GMs. That's the deep. Owner.
That's deep. I like that. Deep.
So I'm going to put the number six to represent external forces. Frankie, your final pick.
I'm going a different route. I think that when you look at the Kings, their history in Sacramento, the people that have been most notable, their all-time ranks here. As bad as the teams were back then, DeMarcus Cousins deserves to be on this list.
I very much considered it. I heard Twitter yelling at me and I stopped.
I don't know. I mean, they can yell at him for all his antics and all that stuff, but I think
it's the lack of success.
In the Sacramento era,
that's where I stopped.
The way I view it is DeMarcus Cousins didn't fail the Kings. The Kings failed him. They failed him to surround him with talent.
Snaps, queen, wait, snaps.
they did, though. You have him for almost a decade. They have him for 7-8 years. You fail. You bring Rudy Gay to Sacramento. Great. But you fail on pick after pick. You draft Willie Cauley-Stein. You draft Nick Stauskas. Jimmer, the nightmare of the Jorgis Papagiannis draft. They failed to bring in talent to surround him. And they tried. They did try 1 year, and they brought in Rondo and Kufis, or maybe even the next year when they brought in Aaron Aflalo, Matt Barnes, just veterans to surround him with in shooters. But they never swung that big deal outside of the Rudy Gay trade. They never swung that Sabonis-type deal and sent off some of the other guys. And maybe they couldn't. Maybe they weren't able to. But also, I think it's just inept. The front office was very inept at that point.
I think that's an excellent point, because that's actually, as you were talking, that's exactly what I was thinking, was what would people have said if we would have traded Tyreke Evans when he was at his – or when he had some form of trade value? What if the Kings would have cashed in their chips at that point?
That's a great question. After Tyreke – I'm still at the recent thing on the
– drawing connections here?
Tyreke Evans, his second season with the Kings, right? He took a step back. He went from averaging 25-5 to 17-4-5, but he still had a steal and a half. He was 40% from the field, which is awful. 3-point shot never really developed until his later seasons, but that's pretty reminiscent to the Kings trading, say, Tyreke at the deadline in the second year for, I don't know who would have.
I don't think it was ever even discussed. And so I can't even tell you what his value was at that point.
I think it would have been high. I think we have to ask James Hamm or some of the other guys that were actually covering the team back then. But I feel like if Tyreke Evans coming off of that 25-5 season at the midpoint of a season, the next year where he's averaging 17-5-5 and still a steal and a half per game, I would think he has maybe not as much value as Tyrese Haliburton had, but significant value to bring back a piece to bring a wing for DeMarcus Cousins or a different guard. Mm-hmm. But also, the team was different back then. I don't know if the Kings had multiple guards like the Kings did this year when they traded Tyrese. But point is, DeMarcus Cousins gets a lot of blame. I don't think he really deserves. I mean, the on-court and off-court antics are inexcusable. It was ridiculous watching him complain and throw tantrums and all. It was ridiculous, man. Ridiculous. No pun intended. Well, pun intended, actually. So, but what it comes down to, looking at this franchise from 1985 to 2022, that 8-year chunk, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. That's almost a third of the time the team has been here, from 2010 to 2017, 2018. DeMarcus Cousins was the part of that, the main part. The guy is top, like I said, He's the leading rebounder in Sacramento era. I believe he's top five in points scored. He's top six in points scored. He's top six in points per game. And he deserves a little respect in my mind. I feel bad that his career has gone the way that it's gone. I was looking forward to him potentially playing last night, but he didn't get his deal signed in time because he still has only played one game in Sacramento since he's been traded, which I can't really believe that's true, but he's played one game in Sacramento since he's been traded, which by the time he comes next season, it'll be 6 years. So incredible.
Who frankly knows if he'll get that shot?
He might not ever get one again. The only game he might have ever played in Sacramento as an opposing player, he had hit 41 points and 22 rebounds. So,
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely the pick that my heart wanted to make. But like I said, I just think at the end of the day, if you're going to build a Mount Rushmore and have it up, you know, for the remainder of history, it would be you would have to do a lot of explaining. And those who know for sure know, but you would have to explain why, yes, this guy was putting up 28 and 12 or whatever, but the team was nowhere near the playoffs. How could you have this guy as one of your franchise players, or, you know, as one of your all time franchise players?
That's fair. That's a fair argument too. It's fair.
But like, I mean, it's the hand we're dealt. I mean, we really don't, it's either to me, you put in like Peja or Mike, or you put in DeMarcus. And so you have to make that choice of, are you going to put in one of the guys who aren't as talented as him, but were a part of a winning team? Or are you going to take the guy who is clearly the better talent of them all, but
I mean,
didn't necessarily lead to results?
A cop out or sit the fence, as I like to say that you do on a lot of things. if you wanted to say, like, okay, for the Rushmore of the Kings, you could just put the entire 2002 Kings on a Rushmore head, and then it gets interesting. Yeah. If you put just the 2002 Kings on a Rushmore head, mm-hmm. which would include how good those teams were, like Adelman, Peja, yes. Weber, yeah. Bibby, then you probably have Richmond, and then
you would have else? To put DeMarcus.
DeMarcus. De'Aaron Fox.
I just don't think at this exact moment, I don't think De'Aaron Fox has earned that. I don't think he has quite stapled himself as like, yes, this guy is somebody that is, you know, just universally recognized as a franchise piece.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. De'Aaron, speaking of moments, we haven't really seen him have his moment either. I mean, mm-hmm. all these 40-point games like that, it's cool. It's cool to watch. I mean, Boogie too had his moments, but they weren't like the Mike mm-hmm. Bibby moment or Chris Webber has a laundry mm-hmm. list of moments that we could go back and look at. Doug Christie even has his moment. Those guys have their moments, right? De'Aaron needs his moment. He needs to have his moment, and it has to be in a winning situation. Like they're going for something.
Mm-hmm.
What I was saying about Doug though, real quick, was he had 8 steals one game. He had like that leak out pass to, yeah. I think it might have been Keon Clark or it was in San Antonio, and it just had him going the skip. Remember he was skipping?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That was the game I'm talking about. So people have their moments.
Doug also hit Rick Fox. That was for sure a moment.
Okay. Yeah. I'm totally forgetting. I totally spaced on that part. Yeah.
DeMarcus had his 55 point games and his.
The mouthpiece spit.
Mouthpiece spit, this is ridiculous. You and I very fondly remember that game winner against Phoenix. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everybody else remembers that quite as well as you and I do, but
we were there. Was that your first buzzer beater that you ever saw?
Possibly, yeah. I didn't really think about that, but it definitely might have been.
It was so exciting for me because of that very reason. I was just like, yeah, I was, you know, stunned.
De'Aaron has game winners, but I wouldn't really say he has a moment. Like, he does have the putback dunk in Miami, I guess, is the closest that you can get to his moment.
Or the Philly thing.
Tyreek had his half-court shot. That is the moment of moments.
Tyreek also had, like, had back-to-back games where he had the game-winning layup against Milwaukee. He had the game-winning layup against the Knicks. Mm-hmm. He had the game-winning steal against the Nuggets and a game-winning shot, again, a go-ahead shot. That he had a bunch of moments that rookie mm-hmm. year. That was honestly a fun rookie year. As bad as those games were, those teams were, team with Tyreek Evans,
the way they won games, I remember, was always exciting. When they mm-hmm. when they were not getting blown out, it was always a last second layup or shot or. But anyways, yeah,
I would say that's the argument against De'Aaron. It's just he's not quite there yet. And we'll see. I mean, you know, with this Sabonis pairing, maybe those two will get a nice tandem.
Yeah, I'm hopeful they can still kind of get something going this season. But I'm very excited for the beginning of next season. It sucks it's so far away, but I'm very excited to see what they do with those two, what they surround them with, because I feel better about any beginning of any season when you have two players that are all-star caliber. That's the first time we've had that in a very long time. So.
Very long time. I can't even think. I mean, there was, I guess, maybe people were talking to them. No, I mean, not even when DeMarcus was at his peak, like Tyreek had already kind of fizzled out and there wasn't really hope for that. I guess maybe Isaiah Thomas and DeMarcus, but even then there wasn't really realistic all-star expectations for either of those. Yeah, it's been a while, and that's really interesting, especially with them potentially having a top 10 pick. You know, they have the trade piece of Harrison Barnes as an expiring contract. You know, there's rumors that they're going to try and move as a 4-year, $40 million deal. I think it'll be 3 and 30 at that point.
I think he's making more than that. James and I in the press room were talking about last night that the Kings could potentially, like, this is not a rumor or anything. We were just saying, oh, a possibility because the salaries line up. Luke Kennard and Rashawn are on around the same contract. They make around $13 million a year.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I would like it. Kings need shooters.
They do need shooters. I'm not sure Luke Kennard is a shooter. He shoots the ball.
So, not to get ahead of ourselves, looking at the basketball reference, if I told you that DJ Augustine was still playing, would you believe me?
No.
He's still playing.
Or I would say he's like the third or fourth guard on the Bucks.
No, he's the backup point guard for the Rockets, and he has a $7 million contract. That's
playing for the Rockets. He has a $7 million contract.
I believe he was traded.
I know why I'm looking at Luke Kennard's numbers right now, and he's shooting 44% from three.
What I'm saying is, put some respect on Luke Kennard.
Interesting.
Now I'm interested.
You have my attention.
Now you have my attention. Who else do we have on this basketball reference list?
DJ Augustine is interesting. I've always liked him, but never. I mean, there was that year with the Magic where he literally won them a single playoff game was insane. And I feel
what
like,
year was know, that?
It was like 2 or 3 years ago. It was
the
year before the bubble.
Yeah, 2019. He averaged 12, and I mean, he started all five games. 48% from the field, 47 from 3-point that series.
Yeah, he was going stupid bananas. And Brian Cardinal, Marcus Smart.
He's a 13-year veteran. Yeah, Marcus Smart. So the Kings did try to get Marcus Smart a couple times, right? They met with him at Summer League. There was that picture of him and Vlade at the top of the bleachers at the Thomas and Mack Center. And it was literally Vlade and Marcus Smart like by themselves. It was very strange in empty stadium seats talking. And I'm sure Marcus Smart was like, you know what? I'm staying in Boston, dude. Sorry. Like, y'all suck. Brian Cardinal's a champion.
Alan Crabb, I'm looking at here. I remember the Kings were considering making an offer towards him before he got his mega deal with Brooklyn.
Is he still getting paid, by the way?
I don't believe so. I think it's over now. It ended in the
bubble.
2019-20 season. Yep.
He made $75 million. He
made a lot of money. Him and Tyler Johnson made more money than anybody should have made in that time.
He's not even 30 yet.
Timothy Mozgov.
Believe he's in the G League, too. I think Alan Crabb's making a comeback, right? In the G League?
I have not heard that.
He plays for, the Westchester Knicks.
Good luck on you, Alan.
He's only 29.
You the best. Brian Cardinal, who was a staple for, I feel like I only, he was on Dallas for a lot shorter than I remember, but did he get a ring with it? No, he didn't.
Yeah,
oh, he did. He got the championship with Dallas. That's why I remember him so fondly.
He played, too. He played, like, I believe, he played 9 games in that postseason run.
Wow. That's incredibly surprising. That'd honestly, be like, oh, Brian Scalabrine actually played for those Celtics finals teams or something. That would be the equivalent of what you just told me.
Brian Scalabrine really won a ring that year. So did Scott Pollard, by the way, on that Celtics team.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Then he walked into the – I think that was the last team he ever played for.
How about Boban? What are your feelings on Boban?
He's an actor.
End of sentence.
He's an actor. I mean, I don't know. I think that he – what are his per 36? His per 36 – oh, my God. He's 29.8 points per game, 11 rebounds. Per 36, because he only can play short bursts. You know, he's playing 5 minutes per game right now. I don't think he's even in the rotation, really. But
his per 36s might go down in history as being the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, when he plays, he does things, you know. Oh, I thought he was younger than 33.
Per 36 career average is 23 points and 15 rebounds.
Insane. Oh, by the way, he's under contract still for two more seasons at 3.5 mil per. So he's going to get a nice little penny before he rides off in the sunset. He'll be 34 next season. I would imagine that'll probably be it for a guy that's 7'3", 300 pounds.
He's playing.
It's fun.
Just played under 10 minutes pretty much his entire career, but it's just interesting. It's very interesting. I don't know. Like like you said, every time he comes in, he produces and like, he will have when he plays bits, he will have like, you know, 16 and 12 games and stuff like that. It's just
so he's completely out of the rotation, though. He's completely out of the rotation. He's played once since Christmas. He has just not played.
Very interesting. Like, I mean, it makes sense because he probably is. It's probably not offense that's the problem. I mean, defensively, you obviously would want to just get a switch on him and he would be completely. I mean, he's not going to be able to cover De'Aaron Fox, you know,
no.
Like Boban's going to get murdered every day of the week. And so I feel like maybe that's part of it. But begs the question, would Yao Ming be anything if he played in today's NBA?
I think so.
Sounds like your friend Blake.
Yeah, that's a good question. I should ask him. Yeah, would Yao Ming be good in the NBA today still? I would say he'd probably be fine, but
I don't know. Yao couldn't run. He had foot problems.
Yeah, he'd be good. He'd be good for one season, probably. Backup center. He played he played big minutes though. He played 37 minutes in 2008.
Rick ran that man into the ground.
And then he came back and played five games in 2011. Did he ever get a big contract?
He came into the league, didn't he?
He had a rookie deal, then he signed a rookie extension. Also, was he number one pick?
Yes.
He was. Yes. Hall of Famer, 8-time All-Star. Yeah. How many playoff? Did they ever make it far? Did they ever go far?
I don't believe so because there was always – Yao made the All-Star game every single year he played.
Yeah. I mean, fan voting, right?
I guess. Yeah, that's very true. Very good point. So, I don't believe they made the far in the playoffs, sorry, because it was always a thing that Tracy McGrady never made it out of the first round.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Yep. They made it to second round 1 year, game 7.
Yep.
Game 7, did they scored 70 points in a game 7 at Staples Center. That's – Tracy McGrady was gone at that point, though.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah, T-Mac, he just did never, for whatever reason, until he was on the Spurs, actually, funny enough, the one year Tracy McGrady made it past the first round, A, he was not, like, actively playing, B, it was the freaking Ray Allen year.
Chris,
that's
right. Oh yeah, he was seconds away,
so close to winning a championship. And then believe he retired, and then
they won it the next year. That happened to Pistol Pete Maravich too when he played for the Celtics. Pete Maravich played a long time for the Jazz and stuff like that, and then he went to the Celtics, played with Larry Bird, said, "You know what? I'm over it."
Yeah,
retired. They won a championship the next year. I guess he was super upset about it. I read that in a Larry Bird book a long time ago. So this Rockets team, the 2009 Rockets, they took the world champion Lakers. They went on to win the championship the next 2 years, I believe, to game 7 of the second round. Do you want me to tell you what their rotation was? I'm looking at game 7 right here.
Ray for Alston?
No. Their starting point guard was Aaron Brooks.
Oh, Sacramento Kings legend Aaron Brooks.
Their starting center was Luis Scola. Okay. Their starting power or small forward was Meta World Peace.
Great guy.
Their starting two guard was Shane Battier. And their starting power forward, Chris, was Chuck Hayes. Then their bench was young Kyle Lowry, Vaughn Wafer, Brent Barry, and Carl Landry. This team took the Lakers to game seven.
They traded T-Mac this year, I believe.
Yeah. They had Mutombo was playing in 09.
That is hilarious. The year they trade T-Mac is the year that they make it past the first round. Can't make that stuff up.
Did they trade him at the deadline to the Knicks?
They must have. Yeah, he played 35 games for him that year.
Or did he get hurt? Yeah, they traded him to the Knicks.
Tough stuff.
Man, he was done at that point. He is really just completely... He was only 28, too. In 2008, he was 28. T-Mac averaged 21. The next year, done. 15 points a game, and then by the next year, he was averaging 5, and then he was out of the league in 2 years. So, crazy.
Absolutely insane.
excuse me. Sorry, not COVID. Just living.
Interesting. Very interesting stuff. Is that it? I mean, we've done a good job of stretching out this basketball reference segment. Let me see here. Yeah, no, I think that's all the meat off that bone. I believe the Kings, so they play Saturday against Denver as well.
Road trip coming up. Five game road trip,
which will conclude when they come back, I believe, also against Denver, correct?
No, it goes Denver on Saturday, then they have OKC. Next Wednesday, Thursday, everybody, make sure you tap in. The biggest two games of the year take place Wednesday, Thursday. They play New Orleans on Wednesday, the Spurs on Thursday. If they could win both of those, which is insane, it's probably not going to happen, but if they win both of those, they secure the tiebreaker with both New Orleans and San Antonio while picking up games in the standings. Some big games coming up. The OKC game, that's a must win. Then those other two against New Orleans, San Antonio, must wins. Then they finish it with Dallas, and they come home and play the Knicks. And that's such a brutal stretch of games. So brutal stretch in March.
Brutal stretch.
Knicks, Nuggets at home, Jazz on the road. Then they have a homestand with the Bulls, the Bucks, the Celtics, and the Suns. Horrifying.
Fun stuff.
So we'll be back.
Probably, let's say, Tuesday?
I think Tuesday we could do it, yeah.
Tuesday is probably the day that we'll come back. At that point, I mean, you know, there's a lot of winnable games, I think. And I shouldn't even say that. God, I can't believe I said that.
You're falling into it.
I know. They have some less difficult opponents after playing the Nuggets, like you just stated. The Thunder, the Pelicans, Spurs, Mavericks, and Knicks are all, you know, if you're trying to compete for that play-in spot, those are all games that you should at least, you know, be competitive in and probably grab at least three of them. So let's hope that, you know, this is a nice, especially, you know, with all those tough games coming up right after, the Kings are going to need to pick up some games right here, or else they're definitely digging themselves a hole that I'm frankly just not sure that they can dig themselves out of.
Yeah, I would say if they lose to Denver and OKC, I'd say they should shut down some people. That's just my opinion. If they fall six games out with less than 20 to go, what are we doing? I mean, what are we actually doing? If you got to take care of business, don't risk injury.
Yeah, I mean, it would be very fitting because I just feel like the theme of this year has just been a lost year. There's really not much that they can salvage from this season, except for the fact that they received Domantas Sabonis and will have him moving forward. But besides that, I mean, I don't really know what the point.
That might be the win of the year if there is one. Hopefully it's a win long term, but the takeaway, you know, win, but a takeaway is you have an all-star center for next season. You have De'Aaron Fox for 4 more years under contract. You have your picks. Let's see what happens. But yeah, we'll see if they can get through this weekend. and Tuesday, hopefully we have some good things to talk about. But I'm still excited. I'm excited to see what happens. I'm hopeful, and that's all we can be. Hopeful.
Yep, hopeful. But you remember what I always say, hope is the thing that will kill you. So don't get too hopeful. Temper your expectations, but at the same time, get excited. Because
fair enough.
If it's not going to be now, it's probably not going to happen. And if it is going to be now, this is going to be the start of it. And, you know, it'll. This is kind of the season, honestly, coming up. As funny as it sounds, like you said, I mean, if they don't do well in this little stretch, there's a good possibility that they might.
You know,
it might not be immediately after, but it kind of is the start of the end at that point.
Yeah. Every game is precious. Every game is precious. And
every game really is. Yeah.
If they go through the next two and don't have one win, OKC, Denver, yeah, it's a problem.
So, we will be back hopefully on Tuesday. Thank you all for listening so much. Or thank you so much for listening is what I meant to say. We are an hour 20 into this. So, again, if you listen to all of this, we really appreciate it. For Frankie Carzilli, I'm Chris Watkins. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.